Welcome back. The St. Louis Blues are off to a fast start on the young NHL season. They lead the Central Division with 6 wins and are yet again searching for their first Stanley Cup. To commemorate last year's 50th anniversary season, former St. Louis Post-Dispatch sports columnist Dan O'Neill has written, "When the Blues Go Marching In," an illustrated timeline of St. Louis Blues hockey. St. Louis Public Radio editor Bill Rack spoke with O'Neill about the history of the Blues and began with the observation that the book was heavy on photos and is a comprehensive look at the team from its earliest days to today.
Yeah, it's an easy read because it's a timeline, and I didn't count them up, but it's probably about 75 vignettes that I felt were the biggest moments in over the last 50 years for the Blues. They're not necessarily everybody's biggest moments, maybe. Somebody may have a favorite moment that's not in there, but don't pretend to cover everything over 50 years. But I think it does a pretty representative job of illustrating the top players, the top moments, the top trades, top goals, and just the most significant things that have happened over 50 years of hockey in St. Louis. You know, it's kind of interesting. When the Blues got here and started in 67, St. Louis had the NBA Hawks. They had the NFL Cardinals. Of course, the baseball team was in the World Series that year. They also had the Soccer Stars, a Major League Soccer team. And it's just kind of funny when you think about it now, all those things have come and gone. Another NFL team has come and gone. Several soccer teams have come and gone. And an ABA team has come and gone. You know, people always talk about St. Louis being a baseball town, but here they've had this love affair with this hockey team for 50 years now.
I was going to mention that we're often called a baseball town. But why has this town stuck with this team despite its lack of a title over the years? And this is, you mentioned, the 50th anniversary of them arriving in St. Louis. Based on what you've seen in your research and doing this book and covering them for many years, what is it about the Blues that continues to draw big crowds and a pretty passionate fan base?
Yeah. That's a really tough question, and it's an interesting thing to think about. I don't really have an answer for that, except that I think there's something about hockey and the players that just sort of resonates with a Midwest town like St. Louis. I've been to a lot of Canadian cities, and really St. Louis is a little bit like some of the Canadian cities I've been to. And I think that's one of the reasons why there's more than 40 Blues alumni that still live here.
Yeah,
it's kind of a simple place, very much family-friendly, get-anywhere-in-a-half-hour kind of town, you know, as opposed to the bigger, of course, Toronto and Montreal are big cities. But there's something to that, I think. It's a lot of the towns these players are from are smaller Midwest kind of cities and towns, and some of them farm or rural towns. But I do think while the Blues haven't won a championship, what they have done is come close, and their timing on that was great because they did it their first 3 years here. They went to the Stanley Cup Finals. And there's something about it, it sounds strange to say this, but the fact that they haven't won is, I think, in some ways kind of an asset because, you know, it always leaves you wanting more. While they haven't won, they've had some great, great moments that you tend to appreciate more because they haven't been overshadowed by a championship.
Right.
They've also had some of the best players to ever play the game here. I mean, when you look at, for instance, when they made the trade and they got Wayne Gretzky in 1996, the very first night he played in Vancouver, and their starting lineup that night was Wayne Gretzky at center, Brett Hull at right wing, Shane Corson at left wing, Chris Pronger on defense, Al MacInnis on defense, and Grant Fuhr in goal. Now that's 5 Hall of Fame players on the ice at one time,
right.
And Shane Corson was a pretty darn good player as well. So it just sort of illustrates when you look at Brett Hull and Wayne Gretzky and Glenn Hall and Gary Unger and Red Behrens and Bernie Federko, they've had some of the best players, not just, you know, Hall of Fame player, but some of the best players have ever played the game. And St. Louis has embraced that. There's something about St. Louis that embraces its athletes. And I think the Blues, the hockey players, have done a good job of embracing St. Louis. You know, as I said, there's more than 40 alumni players still living here. They get involved in the community. They always have. And for whatever reason, St. Louis has embraced not only hockey, but the players as well.
And even some of those who have left St. Louis because of trades or for whatever reason, you have in the book, it sounds like you've interviewed some of them recently about the book, for the book, and they even mentioned that their time here was special.
Yeah.
And it didn't sound like they were just saying that because doing a book on the Blues, that they really appreciated their time here. And of all the places they went, this seemed like the place where the fans embraced them the most, and they enjoyed the town, friendliness. And as you said, a lot of them have stayed, but those that have left seem to have a special place in their heart for St. Louis.
Well, especially when you consider, you take Brendan Shanahan, who came here and was a 50-goal scorer here. Now, he didn't have the team success that he had elsewhere. I mean, he won Stanley Cups in Detroit, and he played longer in Detroit, and he's now in the Hall of Fame. But he still cherishes his time in St. Louis. Brett Hull, of course, had a great career here. He didn't win a Stanley Cup until he went to Dallas. Then he won a cup in Dallas, and he won a cup in Detroit. Chris Pronger, same way, played here, had to go somewhere else to get to a Stanley Cup Finals and to win a Stanley Cup. All those guys loved their time here. I mean, Brett lives here. Chris Pronger lives here. Brendan Shanahan is I'm not sure where he's living. He doesn't live here. But point being, even though they had greater success in other cities, St. Louis either remains or always has been special to them. So I think that sort of speaks to it. It speaks to how the players are treated here and how the community embraces them. And, you know, it's kind of interesting because that's the one thing Mike Keenan never could quite get his arms around, because when the Blues hired Keenan.
Should mention he was a coach in the 90s. Right?
Well, he had coached the Rangers to the Stanley Cup for the first time, and it was a long, long time. That following season, during that period, during the 90s, when the Blues were signing Scott Stevens and signing Shanahan and then signing Mike Keenan and essentially stealing players from other organizations, you know, he came here, and he didn't get that. And so when he got here, he traded some of their most popular players. He traded Curtis Joseph. He traded Brendan Shanahan.
Didn't treat Brett Hull very well.
Didn't treat Brett Hull. They didn't get along well at all. But he always talked about changing the culture, because the culture was St. Louis embraced these guys who, in his mind, have never accomplished anything. And he just didn't like that and really tried to reorganize not only the team but the organization to win a cup, and it didn't work out. But, you know, it was so interesting when he was here and his feud with Brett Hull. I remember I was covering a game in Colorado, and this was typical of what was going on at the time. I was walking through the hotel lobby, and I bumped into Brett. This was before the game. They're just about getting ready to leave for the game. And I bumped into Brett, and I said, "Brett, you know, how you doing? What's going on?" And he says to me, Nothing's going on, unless you would consider the fact I'm not playing tonight to be something." I'm just like, oh, my God.
Kind of a big deal.
I had to run up to the room and get out. I said, "Wait here," and he ran up, got a notebook, and talked to him. But sure enough, I mean, Keenan made him a healthy scratch that night, and he didn't play. The Blues won the game, which saved Keenan's face a little bit, but it wasn't long after that Mike got fired, and then shortly after that, Brett played out his contract and wasn't re-signed. So,
I want to dive into those early years a little bit. It was one of my favorite parts of the book, just because some of the photos really take you back. And for casual fans or maybe new fans to the team, they may not realize, you mentioned it earlier about the Stanley Cup Finals, that the Blues, an expansion team, made it to the Stanley Cup Finals in their very first 3 years of existence, which was an amazing feat. They didn't win, but they did make it to the Stanley Cup Finals. Mm-hmm. There were only 8 teams at that point, correct? And they were one of 4 new teams?
Well, there were 12 teams.
12 teams, excuse me.
8 teams that went into the playoffs.
Correct.
Yeah.
So talk a little bit about those early years, because, as I said, that may be, you know, news to some folks who maybe have become fans of the Blues recently, and what a big deal that was for the town.
Yeah, Bill, well, I was telling you, I was lucky enough to get a job at the Arena Club as a busboy during those first few years. So I was having a good time watching that and, you know, clearing tables. But I've always thought the Blues' first season would make a great movie. If I could find somebody interested in a script, I would write it. But it was just an amazing thing. First of all, they got the team basically because the arena was here. When the NHL decided to expand in 65 and then accepted applications, which at the time were $10,000, the Blues were very late to the table. In fact, they had already given out five franchises, and Baltimore was in line to get the other one. But the thing was, is the Chicago Blackhawks owned the arena here. And the Chicago Blackhawks owners saw an opportunity to dump this dilapidated old arena on a St. Louis franchise. So when the Solomons showed
up. Pardon interruption. Mm-hmm. What had the arena been used for prior to the Blues?
Well, and the arena opened in 29. It was a national arena for dairy shows. And the Blackhawks acquired the building in 47, I think, 1947. And the St. Louis Flyers played there. They were an American Hockey Association team. You know, I think four or five years, the Hawks Central Hockey League affiliate, the St. Louis Braves, played at the arena. So they had owned the building for almost 20 years and put nothing into it, and it was in pretty bad shape. So anyway, they became an advocate for the late St. Louis application. And the league actually held aside that last spot for the St. Louis group, contingent on them buying the arena. So the arena is really what got St. Louis the franchise. And then the Blues, of course, they hired Lynn Patrick as the Solomons and their group, Sid Solomon, Sid Solomon III. They hired Lynn Patrick, longtime hockey royalty, really. His family had been involved in hockey. He'd been a player, a coach, everything. So they hired him to oversee the hockey operation. And one of the first things Lynn did was hire Scotty Bowman. And Scotty Bowman at the time was sort of the heir apparent in Montreal to Toe Blake, who's a legendary coach, was coaching the Canadiens at the time. And Scotty had been very successful coaching minor league hockey, juniors. But he wanted a shot at the NHL. So Lynn Patrick hired him. When he hired him, it was understood that Scotty would be the coach. But Lynn wanted to see what kind of personnel he had to begin with. So he coached the team to start, and the Blues actually had both he and Scotty Bowman behind the bench. Now you see it all the time. You see two or three guys behind. At the time, they were the first team to have more than one coach behind the bench. They got off to a very slow start. They only won four of their first 16 games. And Lynn Patrick decided to step aside and have Scotty coach the team. And, of course, that was a turning point. Scotty made a big trade for Red Berenson and Barkley Plager shortly thereafter. Both of those guys became stars. Red Berenson became probably the most important player to the expansion era because he didn't just become a star in St. Louis. He became like the biggest star in the new Western Division. You know, the Blues turned it around late in the season. They qualified for the playoffs. And, Bill, then they played, in that first year, they played 18 playoff games, eight of them went to overtime and four of them went to double overtime. So it was just really exciting stuff. And on top of that, they had all these characters on their team. They had the Plager brothers, Noel Picard, mentioned Berenson, Glenn Hall. The next season, Scotty talked Jock Plan out of retirement. They had Jock Plan in the net with Glenn Hall, and those two were the best goaltenders in the league the following season. And Scotty talked all these guys out of retirement. Dickie Moore and Doug Harvey. Al Arbour was going to retire. He talked him out of retirement. And all those guys played a big part in the success, especially postseason success. All those first three teams, as you mentioned, all three of them went to the finals. So that combination of characters, a 34-year-old Scotty Bowman at the very beginning of a Hall of Fame career, it just all was magical. And really, the Blues, going to the Blues game became like, it was sort of like a Beatlemania kind of thing.
I was going to ask you, what was the attendance like in those early years? Were St. Louisans excited about hockey?
Well, yeah, it was slow at the start, but about midway through that first season, the Blues had a game where they were trailing New York 3-0 at home on a Saturday night, and they rallied and beat them 4-3. And that game just resonated. It just took off. The excitement surrounding the Blues just sort of exploded from there. And people would come to the game. It wasn't just a thing about going to a sporting event. it became the place to be, and people would come to the games dressed to the nines. Yeah. And Norm Kramer in a sequin jackets would play When the Blues Go Marching In. Everybody would stand and clap.
I believe they'd play that after every goal when they would
score. When they came on the ice.
They came on the ice, and then after every goal. Everybody would sing along, and that was obviously the title of your book. But right. And you mentioned in the book that Norm was one of the first organists in an NHL facility.
He was the first guy to do that, you know, to use the music to inspire the crowd. In fact, he was so effective. When the Blues had the All-Star game here in 1970, I should know that. But when they had the All-Star game here, the other teams insisted that Norm Kramer not be allowed to play, because it would be an advantage to the West Division All-Star team.
Somehow, yeah.
But the other teams would actually come and scout Norm Kramer to see how he did it, and they wanted to sort of install that in their arena. So he was a big part of it. Another big part of it, Bill, was Dan Kelly. You know, Jack Buck was actually the first announcer for the Blues, announced their first goal when Larry Keenan scored October 11th, 1968. Or 67, I'm sorry. But the Blues hired Dan Kelly, who had been working Hockey Night in Canada and was a top announcer in Canada. So he came here, and when they started, you have to remember, in those first few years, there was probably only 10 to 12 games on TV every season. I mean, there just weren't a lot of games that were televised. So Dan Kelly, you know, not only had to sort of educate people on hockey in St. Louis, but he also sort of educated them on how exciting it was. You know, he made it exciting, and he made it, you know, just the thing you wanted to listen to. It just became a really big deal, and I think he had a big part in that. You know, his call of Red Berenson's six goals in November 68, and those things, I think, along with Gus Kyle, they just became extremely popular, and that was a big part of the whole thing taking off here.
Mm-hmm. A couple quick questions about the book. I loved all of the photos and the photos of memorabilia. I'm wondering how you accessed all of those, especially the older stuff, obviously, a little bit more difficult to get a hold of. And you've got some credits in the back, but where'd you find all this stuff?
Well, it was really hard. That was the hardest part about doing the book because, oddly enough, the Blues don't own, or they didn't, they do now, but they didn't own the rights to any of those pictures, any of their early pictures, up until just recently. They didn't own any of the rights. So it was hard to find the pictures. It was hard to deal with the people who own the pictures because everybody wants to get paid, and everybody wants to get paid well. So it was hard, but just searched. I got a lot of the pictures are from the Post-Dispatch archives. Mike Miners there at the Post-Dispatch was gracious enough to let me go through that and pick out some stuff. And we got lucky with a few people contacting us who heard about the book. The Hockey Hall of Fame is a great source for that. So really, to answer your question, we just got them wherever we could.
We're all over the place. Really great introduction by Scotty Bowman. How'd that happen? How'd you get Scotty to?
Well, I've been lucky enough to get to know Scotty over the years. I mean, I wasn't covering the Blues, obviously, when he was here. But just from covering the team, Scotty's in town infrequently, but sometimes when the Blackhawks, he still works for the Blackhawks, and when they come play, he's in town, or if I'm in Chicago, I might see him. And I've done, you know, quite a few stories over the years where I've called him up and talked to him. So I've gotten to know him a little bit, and I called him up, and I asked him if he'd do it, and he said, sure, I'd love to. You know, Scotty Bowman is really an amazing guy. He's in his 80s, and you would never know it. If you saw him, if you walked in the door right now, you would think he was 20 years younger. But more than that, he's just incredibly smart. You know, I've been lucky enough and been around some people in sports who are like that. There's something about them that is special. Jack Nicklaus is like that. Jack Nicklaus can tell you what club he used, what his yardage was, on every hole and every championship he's ever won. It's just absolutely incredible. Arnold Palmer was like that. He could do that. And Scotty Bowman is that kind of guy. I mean, he's just incredibly intelligent and sharp. And what he did in those early years, mixing some of the older players he got with some of the younger players and guys who hadn't had a chance yet, and getting really the most out of those guys, was just remarkable and obviously a precursor to a guy who went to the Stanley Cup 13 times. And, of course, the Blues haven't been back to the Stanley Cup final since he left.
Do you have more fun writing for this book about the Blues from the early years or the most more recent folks who've been?
Well, I'm like you, Bill. The early years are my favorite because I was a kid then, and everything was larger than life. Sure. I was telling you, when I worked at the Arena Club, after the game, sometimes you'd be bringing coffee to Dan Kelly or Gus Kyle or Jacques Plante and people like that, and everything was just larger than life then. Plus, my own opinion is the game was much more entertaining then. It's still a very entertaining game. I still love it, but it's much different than it used to be. Used to be a little bit more wide open. Used to be, I think, a few more characters like Glenn Hall and Barkley Plager and Bobby Plager and those guys. And I just think those first few years, it's hard to top that. They went to the Stanley Cup Finals 3 times, and I still love it. They're still a lot of fun to watch. They still have some great characters and some terrific players. But, yeah, those early years are certainly my favorite.
The last question for you. How would you, if it's possible to, characterize this team? Was it a team of futility and frustrations over the years for fans or one of resilience and resolve to be successful? Where do you put them? What kind of team is this? Because as we mentioned earlier, they did have success in the early days, and they've had success here and there, but it always seems like their great successes are followed up by big failures and frustrations for their fans, I think.
Well, it's interesting in sports because, you know, if your job depends on it, everything depends on winning. At the same time, in the National Hockey League, they play 82 regular season games, and then they play, you have to win 16 more to win the Stanley Cup. So I've always found it kind of interesting that, for instance, when Joel Quenneville was here, he's the most successful coach in the history of the franchise, has more wins than anybody, was the only coach to take him to a president's trophy as the best record in the league. And yet there was always this knock on him that he didn't go far enough in the playoffs. And it's almost like, well, what about the 6 months of regular season? I mean, were those entertaining? Was that a good time? And I think that has something to do with it. You know, the Blues have been a very entertaining team most years. You know, they had a rough spell in the mid-2000s, or I don't even know how you say that, 04, 05, coming off the lockout year. They had a rough spell there. They missed the playoffs, I think, 4 or 5 seasons in a row. But before that, they went to the postseason 25 consecutive years. So they haven't won at all, but they're almost like with St. Louis, it's almost like a favorite pet or a favorite child. You know they're going to screw up once in a while. You know they're going to do something, man. But they're always going to do something that makes you laugh, or you embrace them and you forgive them and you hope that the next time they're going to do better. And I think that's just the way most sports, at least in St. Louis. I think if you're in New York or Philly or I don't know, maybe it's different. But I don't think it is really. I think it's just. People want to be entertained, and we talked earlier about all the Hall of Fame players the Blues have had, all the great moments in the playoffs, like Monday Night Miracle and Ron Schock's double overtime goal to send them to the Stanley Cup Finals. Moments like that, I mean, that's enough. And if they win a Stanley Cup, that'll be the greatest moment. But there's been plenty of other moments, and I think St. Louis appreciates those kind of things.
That was Bill Rack speaking with Dan O'Neill about his new book, When the Blues Go Marching In, an illustrated timeline of St. Louis Blues hockey. O'Neill will speak about the book tomorrow evening at 7 at the Catherine Linneman branch of the St. Charles City County Library District on Elm Street in St. Charles. For more information, go to stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. Archive versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis On the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.